Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
When the Oscar nominations were released at the end of last month, there was a bit of a shock that Emilia Perez, which is a Netflix feature, received 13 nominations, a record for a foreign language film. Audiences were less enthused, however, as were the critics. They panned the film. It stars Zoe Saldana, who up until last week was hotly tipped for an Oscar. But it wouldn't be the first one that has raised question marks about award nominations. And joining me in the studio now to talk through some of the worst is Brian Lloyd, entertainment reporter, and Dee Malumbi, who's a film critic. You're both welcome. So we're going to talk about the turkeys, which is always a bit of fun. But I want to talk about that Emilia Perez film first, Brian, because there's so much about this at the moment. It's just gone from, oh, look at this, it's a Netflix film and it's being mentioned when it comes to the Oscars, to nobody wants to talk about it anymore, everybody's running away. What happened?
So the film was released and, you know, the early kind of critical reviews were actually, believe it or not, quite positive. I mean, a lot of people were talking about how kind of, you know, unique it was, and then you had people like Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep and James Cameron kind of coming out to plug for it as well, saying how much they enjoyed it, how different it was. Then everyone else got to see it, and then it became much more of a punchline than anything else. And this wasn't helped along by the fact that the star of the film, Carla Sofia Gascón, a lot of historical tweets were found where she was, I mean, they were pretty, you know, not really au fait. Like, I mean, she was making comments about Muslims, she was making comments about black people, she was making comments about the Oscars in particular, and saying that it was a celebration of the Black Lives Matter movement and not a real award ceremony or war and stuff like that. Now, she's come out and, you know, provided some sort of explanation for it. She's deleted her Twitter account, and I think she's due to do an interview with CNN to try kind of
rescue it, the situation.
Rescue it a bit, kind of, yeah, drive it out of the ditch. But the reality of it is, I mean, between this and the sort of audience backlash, it's not really going to be there for them. I mean, funny, even when we were off air with myself and Dee, you were actually having a discussion about it. You liked it.
I kind of liked it.
You weirdo. What?
It's real quirky and it's so different to everything else that's out there. So I remember when I did watch it, I was like, this is so like unique.
It's different,
like,
but that's not good.
I'm a bigger musicals fan than you are.
That's a fair point.
But it's the problem many people have with it is that it's about Mexico, but it's made in France, and people have an issue with that from the get go. And there was a great sort of clapback video made by someone in Mexico where they had people in stripy, you know, French tops with the onions dancing around the place in South America, going, "Here's a movie about France." People do have a problem with that, don't they?
Yeah, no, and I do accept that. And I think that, you know, what we'll get into today as we talk about kind of, you know, some of the worst kind of best, you know, Oscar winners in the past is that, you know, you have to view all of these things in kind of a broader context. And I suppose, even though it's kind of a cringe phrase, do better when it comes to movies. So I accept that, you know, Emilia Perez, in the context it was made with a French director and everything, that it could have been like maybe a bit more nuanced.
Mm-hmm. But you enjoyed it anyway, which is good to know. We'll probably all take a peek at it because of all the controversy. So let's go to the other ones then that we look at now and we go, well, why did that make it onto the list? American Beauty is there.
Yeah, so this was actually my top pick in terms of the worst Best Picture Oscar winners. And that's for a number of reasons. Firstly, of course, we have to mention that it's obviously very soured now by the casting of Kevin Spacey and all of the allegations that have been launched against him. But as well, the actual storyline is like, when you think of it, at the heart of it, it's about a 42-year-old man who like is brought back to life by fantasies over his teenage daughter's friend who's about 16 years old. And that's really quite disgusting.
Yeah.
The plastic bag scene, which at the time was, you know, very held and celebrated. I can't really take it seriously ever since I saw the parody of it in Not Another Teen Movie, because it actually is really ridiculous that they're romanticising this plastic bag flying around the place. But the other thing that really, really irks me about the fact that American Beauty won is that 1999 is really well known as one of the best years in Hollywood. You look at the likes of Fight Club was out that year, The Matrix, The Blair Witch Project, Magnolia, Being John Malkovich, a couple of fellow Best Picture nominees that year were The Green Mile, The Sixth Sense. And the fact that we're saying American Beauty was the best movie of that year is, it's just sad, really.
Just wrong, in your view. And Brian, you were nodding in agreement to all of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were kind of talking about this off air, but there is this thing where, you know, a film will come out and it'll be hailed by critics and it'll win all the Oscars, and then a year go by and then kind of the shine will come off it, the haze and the fervour will come off it, and people will realise, actually, I don't really know if this was as good as everyone thought it was. I mean, you look back at something like Driving Miss Daisy, for example, or even Green Book, which at the time people were saying, oh, you know, it's this beautiful film and it's about coming together, and then you realise, actually, no, it's not really all that good, you know, that kind of way. It's a bit schmaltzy and it's a bit sentimental, and, you know, Viggo Mortensen, who is a great actor, but in this he's just playing like a mob figure kind of caricature, you know, that sort of way. So it does happen a lot quickly. I think in the case of Emilia Perez, though, that sort of that window, if you like, shrank very, very quickly, where people realised, actually, no, this isn't as good. I don't know what these people are seeing in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, that it takes a bit of time. It's like the Emperor's New Clothes.
Correct.
You know, where everybody's cheering for something, then it goes out into the world and everybody's wondering. But I think once they get an Oscar nomination, it's harder to push back against that.
It is.
It's harder to stand up and say, no, sorry, hang on, this thing is an absolutely rubbish film.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because the idea, I mean, you know, the Oscars, as much as it is held up and propped up by people like ourselves, you know, journalists and all the rest of it, as the sort of the pinnacle of the industry, I don't think it's really telling. I mean, there are so many films, so many directors, so many actors that have never won an Oscar. Stanley Kubrick, you know, Alfred Hitchcock, you know, Gary Oldman. Like, there are so many actors and directors that have never won an Oscar and have done brilliant work before, since, and during, and have never got the recognition they deserve for whatever reason. So, you know, can you really sit there and say it's an actual barometer of what makes a good film and what's enjoyed by? Because, again, the people who vote in the Oscars, I mean, you're talking about people that live effectively within the 30-mile zone, the bubble, if you like. And even though they've taken strides, the Academy has taken strides to kind of broaden the voter base and bring in more people, bring in younger people, you're still seeing the Oscar bait films. Mm-hmm. You're still seeing the very obvious picks make it into Oscars.
Make this movie to win an Oscar.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about a few more of them then. Green Book, we've gone through that, so let's leave that one there. I think we're all agreed that that one has been dissed since it won. And then we move to Chariots of Fire, D, which is on your list. There'll be sharp intakes of breath everywhere now on this one.
I think there will be, yes. And I will say this first and foremost, absolutely iconic score. Like, you cannot top the music by Vangelis, which and the film did win Best Original Score as well as Best Picture. You cannot top that. I particularly love the way that they parody it in the Christmas movie, The Grinch, I think is quite fantastic. But I mean, it's actually the most recent Best Picture winner that I've seen anywhere. I think I think I saw that it was streaming on Disney Plus or one of those streamers anyway. And I went and watched it and I just found it very dull and very generic. And I think the issue with Chariots of Fire, and I suppose you have to, like, you know, consider a lot of these movies in the context of where they were released. This movie probably helped establish a lot of the conventions of, like, the kind of sports drama that we see now. But now when you go back and watch it, it does seem like overly generic and overly conventional. So as I was watching it, I just found it a bit boring. And I think that these kind of sports movies have become such a, like, cliche now, and they've become very associated with Oscar baiting. Like, consider the likes of, you know, George Clooney's The Boys in the Boat, which was out in the last year, and that felt very much like it was trying to vie for the Oscars, probably inspired by something like Chariots of Fire.
Was just of its time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do accept that, but it's also very boring. And also, it beat fellow nominee Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I think that we would go back and say that movie really should have won.
Okay.
And actually, I was impressed that that movie, at the Oscars, it actually won Best Sound, Best Art Direction, Best VFX and Best Editing. I was surprised it was a four-time Oscar winner, but maybe it should have won Best Picture that year as well, because we know which one proved to be the more iconic movie.
What's the problem, Brian, with Shakespeare in Love?
So much. It's kind of held up as an example of the effectiveness of Oscar campaigns. I mean, there was a report recently in Forbes that kind of put the cost of Oscar campaigns anywhere between 3 and 15 million that studios are putting out for it. But Shakespeare in Love, the real reason why people have a lot of problem with this was the fact that Harvey Weinstein, the disgraced media mogul, was directly involved with the Oscar campaign for this. And he was, I mean, pretty ruthless by how much he pushed this into the Oscars and pushed it to win. It won Best Picture, it won Best Actress for Gwyneth Paltrow, won Best Supporting Actress for Judi Dench, won Best Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Original Score, and Best Costume Design. And I mean, you know, like, you watch it now, and again, I do take your point of there are films that exist in their time and they are of the zeitgeist, yeah. And it is the kind of thing of, you know, you just have to, you had to have been there to kind of get why this was so important, why people loved it so much. But you go back and watch Shakespeare in Love, I mean, not only was it massively historically inaccurate, but the performances as well were so kind of showy and schmaltzy. And I mean, there's this argument as well that a lot of these Oscar films, they're actor films. They're not kind of director films. They're not blockbuster films. They're all about like the nuances of the performances and all the rest of it, because actors are the ones who vote for Best Pictures most of the time. You know, that sort of way. They are the ones that are kind of rewarding their own work as opposed to the work of the director.
So they appreciate the beauty of the performance, which maybe we don't understand, Brian. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, it's not that we don't understand. Yeah, I mean, us Luddites, you know, like, and us in the cheap seats watching this. But like, you know, you watch something like Shakespeare in Love, I mean, it is just, you would get diabetes watching this by how kind of sweet and sugary it is. And I'm sorry, like, Gwyneth Paltrow, if she was going to win an Oscar, she should have won it for The Royal Tenenbaums. Mm-hmm. That's the film she should have won an Oscar for.
Film. But
yeah, it is.
You know, that is a problem though, isn't it? When people who haven't been rewarded earlier in their career suddenly pop up, like Al Pacino, Scent of a Woman, you know.
Or Sandra Bullock,
yeah,
Bright Side.
Yeah, it happens, you know, it happens. And then there are people who say, well, look, they deserve it anyway.
That does happen.
To get past that. Anyway, listen, we have to leave it there because we've run out of time. Thank you so much, Brian Lloyd and Dee Malumbi, for coming in. That brings us to the end of the programme, which was produced by Sue Murphy. Research today was by Emma Cawley. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarlath Holland, and Paul Murnock was on sound. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.